So first, I'll thank you all for your practice today. It's one of the great things that be able to come together like this and to be together for a retreat. Be together on the first day of a retreat with a group of people who have some clue what the first day is like. And I hope it hasn't gone too difficultly for you, but as many of us know, the first day has its own unique challenges with the body and the mind and the heart and the world. Not much left. And so it's a wonderful thing that we're doing here. It's powerful, significant. I think it's a good contribution to the world to wake up, to sit, really sit in this life in a full way, and sit with ourselves in a full way. And I'm quite in awe of the power of this practice we're doing. I'm in awe of the power of really showing up and inhabiting our life, really being present for the real experience, the lived experience of the moment, and really being here and feeling it, sensing it through our body and the whole, all of it. And I'm in awe of the power of awareness. These are wonderful capacities we have, and I use the plural intentionally, these wonderful capacities we have for attention, all the different varieties of ways of being attentive, paying attention. And back to the time of the Buddha, he has a lot of different words that he uses that represent, I think, different forms of attention that we use at different times and comes alive at different times. And the word sati for mindfulness is one of them. And sati is the first of the seven factors of awakening, the theme for this retreat. And as I said last night, I didn't say it exactly this way, but there is a particular collection of texts in the suttas, which are all having to do with the seven factors of awakening. It's kind of all these different texts were gathered together for a little anthology. And in this anthology, frequently the seven factors of awakening are paired with the five hindrances. And the text describes the different effect or impact that either the hindrances have or the seven factors of awakening. And the hindrances obscure wisdom. The hindrances make the mind brittle. The hindrances make the mind hard and tight, unworkable, not soft. And the hindrances make it hard to see what's going on properly. Whereas the seven factors of awakening are that which helps make the mind soft, pliable, workable. It's that which makes wisdom possible and helps us to see clearly in this life of ours. And the value of seeing clearly is that this is what will lead us to the direct experience that is freeing, that really allows us to become free of the deepest attachments we have. So there are these two pairings, and the way it's described is the function they have, the effect that they have. And I think of that as the process that they're part of. And each of these are not solid, fixed things. The hindrances are not solid and fixed, but they're processes. They're things that are operating in the mind and the heart, and they unfold and they have an effect. And the seven factors of awakening are processes that exist in the mind or the heart, and they operate in a certain way and move along in a certain way and part of a process of their own. A process which the tradition says is liberating. And these have this kind of dichotomy between the two. It's like two paths in the woods that you're going in. And you take one path, it goes in one direction, take the other path, it goes in the other. And as we'll see when we look at the second factor of awakening, investigation, to be able to see these two paths and be able to choose the wise path as opposed to the unwise path is a huge part of Dharma practice. And so it does take some kind of attention to notice something about our experience, that where it's helpful to go and what is not helpful to go, what process is helpful to be part of and what is not helpful. And the simplest way of describing this distinction is through maybe a memorable, maybe it doesn't sound too sophisticated, discussion, the difference between what is ouch and what is ah. And to be a little bit more sophisticated, what hurts, what is suffering, what is contracting, what is feels like it limits us, tightens us, darkens the mind, versus that which brings light to the mind and expands the mind or the heart or ourselves, that frees us from limited identity and opens up the possibilities of wisdom and then to happiness. And so to be able to kind of start getting a sense, a hang of this, how it works. If I do that, that has that impact. If I do this, it has that impact. So if you're sitting here and you're spending a lot of time in desire or aversion, thoughts of it all, or any kinds of preoccupation, it's actually a very wise thing to not be critical of that, but be curious about what impact this has on you. Does this kind of narrow your vision? Does this kind of tighten you up? Does this somehow feel like it's a contraction? Does this, in some way, does it feel uncomfortable or unsatisfying or an ouch? If you're involved in reflecting on the Dharma, reflecting on the practice, in awe of this practice we're doing, does this what impact does that have on you? Does that have the same impact of narrowing and tightening the mind or darkening the mind, or does it bring light? Does it open you and relax you? What impact does it have? If you're mindful, if you're aware, clearly recognizing the presence of distraction, distracted mind, or when you're caught up in thought or caught up in the hindrances, but you clearly know it, see it, in that clear seeing, what impact does that have on you? What effect does it have? Does it feel differently? Does it have its own feeling and sense? Like, do you sense kind of in the awareness some opening, some clarity, some presence, some stability, some wisdom, some possibility of something opening up and making space in the mind for maybe to be receive and be open for other things? So what I'm trying to suggest is that one of the things we want to start becoming familiar with is the effect, the impact things have on us, rather than only seeing it for what it is. Like, oh, there's a hindrance, there's desire, desire, desire. That could be useful, but I think it's richer and produces more wisdom to see, oh, there's desire and it's tiring me out. There's desire and I've been in there a lot of time before and it's gotten me in a lot of trouble. Or there's, you know, some kind of desire that I'm caught up in and preoccupation. I feel that I'm actually, it feels pleasant, but I can feel, now that I'm paying attention to it, I feel how I'm actually kind of alienated from myself, wandering off in this kinds of realms of fantasy that there's involved. And I can feel that alienation, that separation from it. But if I'm mindful, if I sit up and I'm really mindful of being caught up in desire, there's a kind of reconnection that goes on. Not only am I mindful of it, like I'm supposed to be, supposedly, but now I feel I'm more connected again. I'm here more. And these distinctions might be very subtle at first, or not so, but by seeing that, we start seeing the impact, the function, and we have the opportunity, by seeing that, to open up to allow for, or to that which is healthy, that which is good. And in fact, there's a way of even the things which are not so, the ouch factors that, you know, you feel like you do those and it's more ouch or limiting or not so, you know, long term, not so useful for you. There's a wonderful way of kind of stepping towards them metaphorically. Spread out your arms, like I said, you know, and say yes. You're not approving them, and you're not like embracing them. Come with me, and let's be buddies, and go into the sunset together. It's like just yes, and you see it for what it is, and you're not going to pick it up. You're not endorsing it, but you're not closing down. Here it is. And you're not criticizing yourself for the states of mind, but you're just here. Yes, I'm going to be present for this. That's what you're saying yes to. Yes, I'll be present for this. I don't approve. You know, maybe even you could even say, I don't approve of this, but yes, I'm going to be present for this. I'm going to feel this and be with it so I can learn, so I can learn something. And of course, it's kind of almost like human nature for some of us to get upset and to criticize ourselves and be discouraged. If there's a lot of negativity, a lot of kind of, you know, downer kind of thoughts and ideas, and we're distracted and we're not doing the practice properly or something. And so you can continue if that's, you like that. But I think more interesting is to turn to see all that oh yes, this is what it's like. It's like this. Feel it, sense it, be with it. So you can learn the impact. You can really get a sense, and deeper sense of what's really going on for you. With that information, it's probably easier to say, no, thank you. It's probably easier to move towards a way of being that is more conducive, more productive for developing the practice. And this idea of going yes to the difficulties, that itself, that whole, just to do that fully is, you know, that has an impact. And that has, you can maybe feel the beneficial impact of not closing down, but being open, of maybe being softer rather than, you know, tight around it. Oh yes, here, like this. So that's why I like the word here. For, you know, at least for this retreat, as a representation or evoking the idea of mindfulness. So the first factor of awakening is the awakening factor of sati, translated usually into mindfulness. And it was wonderful the way Diana this morning, in talking about walking meditation, talked about, you know, there's listening and hearing. If you listen is an active kind of verb, and you engage in listening, but you can hear something without trying to hear it. I just heard, you know, a car go by, and it wasn't like you were listening for the car. You can see something, but you can also look at something. And the idea of looking is an active engagement with the eyes to, you know, to study something with your eyes. You're going to look at that. For seeing, you know, you can not try to look, but if you have sight and you just have your eyes open, seeing will happen. And so the same idea is a little bit relevant with the idea of mindful, to be mindful. We do not say, I'm mindfuling. And please don't coin the term. Because mindfulness is not a verb. It's in the sense, it's not an activity that we do. It's more like hearing and not like listening. It's more like seeing than it is looking. So mindfulness is an abstract noun from the adjective mindful. And we say, I am mindful. I don't know of a lot of people who say, I'm doing mindfulness. I guess, you know, in English, we kind of now beginning to, you know, think of it as something we do. But in the Pali Suttas, mindfulness is not something you do. It's something that you recognize that's there. And I think of the closest English word to sati, especially with the way the mindfulness movement has kind of changed the meaning of the word from the Buddhist understanding, is that mindfulness is synonymous, or sati is awareness. And awareness, we don't go around awareing. That's, we don't talk about, I'm going to really be, oh, I'm going to aware well, or like get your awareing going. And I was busy awareing all day long. I think most of us, some teacher sits up here and says, okay, get your mojo going. We're going to be doing the awareing. And, I think probably most of you would, if you tried, would probably be like, get all confused and trip over your own feet or something. What does he mean? But aware is more like, again, more like hearing than it is like listening actively. So we're aware, we're clearly aware, somewhat meaning something similar to, sometimes a little bit similar to the word of being conscious. We be conscious, we don't conscious-ing. It's like we're not doing the consciousness, being conscious, right? We consciousness is there. We are conscious. It's a description. To be aware is a description of a state that we're in, to be aware. And so what we're talking about in the factor of awakening is actually not something we're doing, but something that we're recognizing and allowing. Now, I know this might be a little confusing for some of you who've been thinking of mindfulness as something you're doing all these years of, but bear with me. So the idea is that mindfulness, the sati, is not so much something we do, but something we recognize. We recognize the quality of being aware, being awake, of being conscious. And when we're conscious, what comes into it? If you're aware of your breathing, there is a kind of attention that goes to the breathing, but the awareness, so some focus that we do, the mind does focus, on the experience of breathing. And so that's a kind of doing. But what we do is we're doing it so that this function of awareness can receive the experience of breathing, or so that the experience of breathing can arise in this field of awareness or this capacity to be conscious. And so, as I was saying this morning, I think that there's the active and the receptive part of practice, where we do practices, and then we allow ourselves to be practiced. We do, we offer our focus on something, and then we allow ourselves to be aware of it. And if we only do the active part, we limit the capacity, or limit the impact that can happen of the allowing. So now we're back to what I was beginning to talk about in the beginning, with the hindrances and the factors of awakening, that we also want to become aware of the impact things have, how we're affected by it. And if we're always the one who's active doing the practice, there's no room for the impact, or less room for the impact to really register in a good way. So we might bring our attention to something, and that stimulates a certain kind of awareness. And there's certain things we do in our life that that we're kind of, they're kind of natural, almost natural to have a heightened sense of awareness as we take it in. So I was told there was a beautiful sunrise this morning, and I missed it. But sometimes sunrises and sunsets, people pause and stop, or the rising of the sun. I went to school at University of California in Santa Barbara, which has this wonderful turn in the, so right on the coast of California, where it's, you know, it kind of turns towards the east a little bit. And in the wintertime, the sunrise rises out of the ocean. And I was on my way to take my final exam, biking along the cliff, the coast, in my class. And it was so spectacular, just I stopped to watch the sunrise and came late to the final. So I thought I've always been a little proud of that. I don't remember what grade I got. But you know, something, some way, some things, you know, are, you know, there's a heightened sense of awareness there. If you're with someone who is dying or they just died, there's a kind of, you know, your awareness is kind of on up in a very powerful way. And I mean, just often there's a sense of awareness, consciousness is very, you know, we're really here in a strong way. So the Buddha, in this wonderful text, this collection of texts about the seven factors of awakening, refers to the factor of awakening more as something that arises than something we do. And he talks about how it'll, he says it arises if you if you're really inspired by the Dharma. So you know, wonderful teachings you hear or read or something you think about, and so something, you know, and he talks about how the Dharma, these teachings and this practice, is a vital matter. So if we really understand how vital of a matter this practice is and this Dharma is, and you really think about it, and then we get much, you know, we get kind of serious and inspired, and yet this is really important. And if we enter something that feels really important for us, and like, yeah, I'm not going to waste time here, then that's one of the things that can heighten our sense of presence, of being here, and with that comes awareness, sense of being aware and heightened awareness. Buddha also talked about how reflecting on your virtue can do the same thing. And you could all do that because you guys have been amazingly virtuous for the last 24 hours. I mean, wow. No one's robbed a bank. All kinds of things that, you know, people do out there that isn't. And I don't say this, you know, I don't mean to be joking on this, but there is a long tradition of really taking in, even the brief period of time of being virtuous and the goodness of that. And for the Buddha, he had this idea, you can really reflect on that, and that is something that helps us to awaken to or recognize more this sense, this quality of being aware, being here. And then he had this wonderful teaching about what nourishes this thing, mindfulness, nourishes this what I call awareness, the sati. And this is Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation. What nourishes sati, mindfulness, is careful attention. So if attention is not the same thing as awareness, careful attention nourishes awareness, but careful attention of awareness. So that's the active part that we do, that we can recognize this, oh, I'm aware, but not just recognize it that it's there, but recognize it carefully. I just love this idea, careful recognition, to care about what we're doing, to be careful with what we're doing, to be caring about what's here. And at the heart of who we are, heart of this experience of life, is this wonderful capacity to be aware. You know, exactly what it is, I don't know, but it's kind of a miracle that we should be aware. It's probably, my guess is that it's probably one of the most complicated things that our human physiology has been constructed to do, is to be aware. It probably is a many, many different factors come together to make it possible to be aware. And we often take it so much for granted. It's like this is the biggest, treasure around. And we're so busy using our awareness to be concerned about things. We're lost in our concerns rather than noticing that in order to have any concerns, you have to be, there has to be some awareness. There has to be some. And so to recognize careful recognition, careful attention, caring attention. That's a beautiful thing. Here it is. And that also, to have caring attention to your capacity to be aware is a process. It's a process in motion. It has an impact. And can you feel what that impact is on you? Recognize, I'm aware. When the Buddha, what is often called, people think about mindfulness, is often better called what the Buddha would just the Buddha talked about practicing mindfulness. He very seldom talked about practicing mindfulness by itself, but he talked about practicing the four foundations of mindfulness. And that was a little more complicated group of things that we do. And there's three qualities that come together in the practice of mindfulness. And so it might be useful to consider we're kind of gathering together, evoking a number of things to help us be able to really have a clear awareness, to dwell in awareness to. So one of them is clear comprehension, a clear recognition of what's happening. So clearly recognizing that we're aware, clearly recognizing we're breathing, clearly recognizing that's an inhale, clearly recognizing that as I exhale, there's a release of tension, there's a softening, there's a closing of the belly, or tightening of the belly a little bit maybe, or a little sensation in the tip of our nose or on the lip, top of the lip. And so there's a recognition, right down to some of the details of the experience of breathing. And there's a clear recognition. And that's often what in the modern West is associated with mindfulness, that clear recognition. And that's fine. The second thing that the Buddha the associator brought together for mindfulness practice is ardency. To have a certain ardency, or ardency means, I think of it as the word means it comes from the word tapa, which means like have a fire, a certain kind of enthusiasm or dedication, or really to give yourself fully a wholeheartedness. This is what I'm going to do. I think of it as the idea that this is what I'm doing. I'm committed to doing this. And I know I've spent, many, many hours practicing half-heartedly that only realized in after the fact. I was kind of present for the breath, kind of, but I had all kinds of things to be thinking about, and some of them were fascinating and some of them were not memorable. And but I was kind of there, a little bit complacent, kind of doing it. And that's not ardent. That's not wholehearted. So how do we bring a wholeheartedness to the practice that does not agitate us? A wholeheartedness, it doesn't mean we try too hard and get tight or something. But how do we do it? Kind of bring a fullness to the experience. So there was clear recognition, ardency, and mindful, which I translate now as sati as aware. So we have these three things are working together, and they are supporting each other. We need to have some awareness to be able to recognize something, And if we recognize it kind of in a wholehearted way and are aware of it in a wholehearted way, we need ardency or something like that. As we recognize more clearly, with ardency and clarity, that tends to heighten or strengthen our capacity to stay aware in the present moment, to be here. And awareness grows. As awareness grows, we're able to recognize more carefully. As awareness grows, we have more capacity for ardency, if ardency means to bring a full awareness to our experience, to not have our attention split, but a full awareness, to really connect fully, full attention, and not have our attention split between different factors and fragmented. But, you know, what is it to have a full awareness? And I've done this a few times recent weeks, so some of you have seen this. But, I can, with my little finger, I can pick up the striker. And, holding it, it's fine, it's safe, it's not going to drop, it's very nice, I'm holding it. And look at me, I have like 3.5 fingers, you know, that I can do more things with. You know, so I can, pick up this clock. That's good. I can probably pick up the bell. I wonder what else I can do. I'm pretty greedy. I'm sure I want more things, you know. And I can do all kinds of great things. Isn't that nice? It's a little complicated, but, that's okay. I can get through life this way. Or I can pick up the striker and have my full hand involved in picking up the striker. And so all the fingers wrap around it. I'm holding it completely. I'm fully there for it. And so this ardency, wholeheartedness of awareness, is to recognize what's happening, both in recognizing it's the striker, but also recognizing how I'm aware of the striker. Whether I'm half-heartedly there, I'm kind of there and I'm thinking about what's for dinner here at the retreat. You know, are they going to have leftovers? Are they going to have whatever? Is there going to be enough peanut butter for the duration of the retreat? Important things to think about. Did they? And what about the coffee? Oh, so you recognize how we're not giving all our attention to one thing. And again, a big part of what we're doing is simply recognizing how things are working for us. What's going on? And start to recognize that my attention is not really wholly there. And then learn, how do I bring my full attention to something? And if you bring your full attention to something, how do I bring my full attention to the breath? So part of then the thinking mind gets quieter. Because to have the thinking mind active while you're trying to be with the breath means your attention is split, divided. So can you feel that, so you can see what that's like? So take your time to recognize that. And then can you experiment with then bringing a fuller attention to the breath? So there's more full contact, more full awareness, more taking it in a fuller way. So all the different attentional faculties we have, take it in, feel it, sense it. And if you can't, because the thinking is so wonderful, then what it would be like to take those three things, recognition, ardency, wholeheartedness, fullness, and awareness, to really take in the fact that you're thinking. That's where, not to think better, but to really see, this is what's going on. And this is what it's like to spend a lot of time thinking. Now I really feel that and sense that. So as we do this, awareness tends to become stronger. It's more, and some people feel this because they start recognizing that they're more and more in the present moment. Because that awareness is always in the present moment. So some people feel the growth of awareness, and some people don't recognize the awareness so much as they recognize they're more present all the time for things. They're more here, grounded, connected When they do walking meditation, they're really here in the walking. Eating, you're really here for the eating. You know, you have no idea that oatmeal could be so good. Wow. And so, because you're fully in the experience, or you have no idea that being present, so present in the present moment can be so exquisite. So sometimes we're aware of how present we are, and sometimes we the other side of that is that we have to be aware to do that. Sometimes we're aware, wow, the awareness is strong. So for the Buddha, the first factor of awakening, sati, was not something we do, but something we recognize. And as we do the practice, this awareness factor tends to slowly become stronger. And it can get stronger even faster, or not faster, but, you know, it keeps getting stronger if we have a careful attention to the fact that it's there. A careful attention that doesn't, you know, get too concerned about it, doesn't get too, you know, too much expectation about it, is content to just feel it in a small degree that it's there. So, and as I said this morning, I think of this sati, or this awareness, as being very closely related to, or maybe the same as, how you know something, or how you're aware of something before there's thought, before there's words. So I could close my eyes and put my hand on this object here, the bell. And I might not know that it's a bell if I haven't seen it already. And I feel cold. And I can feel that cold before I have the word cold. I can feel smooth and round before I think bell, because I don't know it's a bell if I haven't opened my eyes. And then I can open my eyes, and then immediately I might say, oh, it's not only a bell, it's the meditation hall bell. And this meditation hall bell here is the same kind of bell that we have at IMC. And at IMC, the bell we had there was a gift from someone who bought it at Tassajara and gave it to us. And so this is wonderful thoughts. And I've long since lost touch with the bell. I'm still touching it, but I'm no longer. I'm off into memories and ideas. And see how that quickly it works? And so, and the full contact, to feel it. So the awareness that kind of is before thought, maybe includes thought, but before words. What is that like? How are you aware? What does the word awareness evoke in you? Do you have a reference point for it? Do you have any kind of reference for a kind of awareness that precedes words and thought? Sometimes I think, rather than using the word awareness, I love the word sensing, to feel and sense. And sometimes for me, awareness is something somatic, because it feels like it arises in the physical sensations of the body, and I'm sensing what's there. So I'm going to touch this bell, the cold, I'm sensing it. I'm sensing the experience of breathing, the sensations of the chest and the belly for me as the torso moves. I'm sensing and feeling, and that sensing is kind of like what awareness is. And that sensing can get stronger and stronger. So, I know I'm repeating myself partly for the purposes of emphasis, is these two sides of practice. There's a side that what we do, so the recognition of what's there, the gathering of attention, so it's maybe focused someplace, like the breathing or the feet as you walk. And we come back, the mind wanders off, and we start again. And so there is something we do. But then when we're at, the attention is in the place of focus, then there's an art to not only stay focused, but also to allow the experience to have an impact on you. Allow it to be received. Allow yourself to be aware of it. Allow it to come into awareness. Allow it to come into our sensing of it, the felt sense of it. And allow it, and don't look for an effect, but exactly, but I mean, like you want it or expect it, but allow it to have an effect, all this. Allow this to influence you. Allow it to change you. How do you sit here? What kind of attention and presence do you do? Will you sit in such a fashion that you're allowing the whole experience of being here to change you? So you're changed. And maybe it's easier to ask, how are you sitting here? How are you being here when you sit and you do walk and all that? How are you? What kind of way are you? So actually, there's very little change, possibility for change. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to budge. You know, you're stubborn. I'm stubborn sometimes, so I can say that. I can say that, you know, that, you know, or you're so caught up in wanting something or so trying to look at your experience, you know, from the control tower. I'm told to be mindful, just look at the breath, and if I look really deeply in breath, then, you know, it'll happen, it, whatever that is. And, you know, there's no room in that kind of intense focus like a laser for, you know, you're not allowing yourself to be changed. It's like, step back and open up. This wonderful gesture, I love this gesture, of having your hands, arms go out, and I'm like, here, I'm here to be changed. As opposed to, you know, I don't know what, bearing down and pushing. And here. So what is it to recognize, here's the breathing, and the continuity of recognition, here, breath, this breath. It's kind of like the anchor that helps us to stay. And then to allow the experience, allow yourself to feel that experience more fully. And allow yourself to be changed by it. And if you do this kind of open, receptive way, you'll be changed for the better. Though sometimes it'll be a roller coaster. Because maybe there are things which you've been holding at bay, grief and anger and fear and different things, that finally, you go like this, and they finally have their chance. Finally, this person is giving me room. And so then they come. But that's actually an important part of the practice, to allow that. And then what is it like to meet that? Let that come into awareness. So to so the Buddha talks about this factor of awakening, of sati, of mindfulness. It's not something we do, but something that arises, and that we nourish it, we feed it, we let it grow by our careful attention, caring attention. And then as we allow it to grow, the Buddha describes very explicitly that allows the arising of the second factor of awakening, which is investigation. And that when that grows, that allows the third to arise, energy or effort. And that allows joy to arise. And that allows for tranquility to arise, and that allows concentration to arise, and that allows equanimity to arise. It's remarkable, the language of the text is things arise as opposed to we do. So we certainly have something to do, but we have to make room for the allow. And if we're too busy and too active and to have too many agendas and too involved in our thoughts, and too involved in our vendettas or our desires, or, you know, there's not much room to allow for things. So you probably all know this famous story, kind of from Japan, of the professor of Buddhism who comes to see the Zen master and to talk about, you know, Zen philosophy. And so the Zen master offers tea. And so the professor holds the cup and the Zen master starts pouring the tea into the cup. But when the water, when the tea water gets to the top of the cup, the Zen master doesn't stop pouring. And so the tea is spilling over. And so the professor says, stop, there's no more room in the cup for more tea. And the Zen master says, and there's not any room in you to have a discussion about what you want to talk about because you're full of philosophy and ideas and, you know. So this idea of making room, emptying ourselves in a healthy way so that there's an allowing, there's space for something to have an impact, an effect, a space for awareness to grow. And as awareness grows, there's more space to experience and feel what's here. And then some of it can be difficult. But then, is there a way of fully making contact, being present for the difficulties, that it's the way we're present for it which is the way forward, not fixing the difficulty. So if we're really afraid, it's a way of helping the fear feel safe, and kind of, oh, here, fear, here. Let me recognize you and allow you to be in this awareness, allow you to be. That sets in motion a very different process than if we feel the fear and we're more afraid of it, we're aversive to it, we're ashamed of it, we're trying to push it away, we're trying to fix it. Might be nothing wrong with those approaches exactly, but it sets a different, it's a very different approach than, you know, this mindfulness approach. It's, oh, here. Which hopefully is we're learning how to do that in a way that's supportive and helpful and freeing and sets in motion a process which is increasingly beneficial. And involves the growth of awareness. Bhikkhu Bodhi, the great translator, he uses that in order to his English translation for sati, when it becomes mature, he calls it lucid awareness. So when I saw that in his translation of the Satipatthana Sutta, or his discussion of it at least, I just love it. I love it. Lucid awareness. Not in his translation, but in his, he's changed his view about what sati is over these decades. And in recent publications, he calls it awareness. And when it gets strong, lucid awareness. Isn't that, I love it. So, it's awareness is in you. Definitely part of you. Your capacity for attention, for sensing, for feeling. And they're all beautiful qualities and capacities you have. It's definitely in you. And it's a treasure. It's hugely beneficial to let this come to the forefront and let it be there. And it's also a vital matter. It's not just a hobby we're here doing this practice, but we're trying to address some of the deepest and most important issues of our life and our existence and for our society. So to really kind of wholeheartedly, full awareness, this experience here, here, so that every time you remember, you're ready to push the scooter again. And then you push it here, and then you allow the momentum of here, this moment of recognition, to allow it to feel and sense. And then you do it, push it again here. And so hopefully, in evoking such important matters as the vital matter of life and death, and how important this practice is, together with pushing a kid's scooter, it's just the right balance between really being wholehearted and being holding all kind of lightly at the same time. May you ever so seriously engage in this practice in a relaxed and light way to discover your lucid awareness. May your lucid awareness be the medicine for all your ills. Thank you.